Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today, I'll be speaking to Tom Kelly. He is the CEO of Firebelly Lawn Care, and we're going to be talking about things landscapers won't tell you about your lawn care. It's that time of the year again in New York, as well as other parts of the world, where spring has obviously sprung and the grass is beginning to grow. In garden centers and nurseries, there are a myriad of products that are being pushed on the consumer that are not necessarily needed in order to keep your lawn healthy all summer long. There are also products that contain harsh chemicals that are dangerous to all beings. Chemicals such as imidacloprid, which are part of the neonicotinoid family, will wipe out any chance that a butterfly or bumblebee will visit your home to pollinate the vegetables in your garden, much less any flowers. Many of these products, subsequently, are very expensive and completely unnecessary. Thanks to clever marketers, people are buying them without having any idea as to how much damage they are doing to their own lawns. To top it off, there are actually certain times of the year when specific products should only be used, but they are being marketed to be used all year round. When it comes to alternatives to these chemicals, they are never even mentioned because this would prevent the chemical companies from enjoying their healthy profits while your lawn becomes unhealthy. Unfortunately, the public only knows what they learn from clever commercials and ads as they spend dollar after dollar buying products that are complete waste and also are contributing to colony collapse disorder. So I'd like to welcome Mr. Tom Kelly of Firebelly Organic Lawn Care to the show. Good afternoon, Tom, and welcome back. You've been on the show once before.
Yeah, hey, June. Good afternoon. How are you today? Bumblebee's easy for you to say, right, especially on a Friday afternoon.
Say it five times. maybe it's all the imidacloprid. Who knows?
Yeah, you pulled off imidacloprid, no problem, but couldn't say bumblebee. I don't know what's up with that.
I know. I should be fired. But now, Tom, you've been on the show before to talk about your background working actually for the Chemical Boys and how basically you took a stand and you said, you know, enough is enough. And you launched your own company that sells organic lawn care products. So for our audience that are not familiar with Firebelly, can you just take a moment and talk about your background and also how you came about to starting the company?
Yeah, sure. I'm one of those people that when I graduated from college back in the early 90s, I had a degree in English and textual studies and had plans to go be a teacher and this and that and who else, who knows what else. And I ended up working as a lawn technician for a company called Barefoot Grass Lawn Service, which was the second biggest chemical lawn care service in the country at the time. And I just fell into the profession. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I worked for a couple different companies in the beginning of my career, and then 1997, I set out and with a couple of partners opened our own business, Chemical Lawn Care Service, and spent about 15 years doing as best I could to grow that business, and we were very successful. We were straight up chemical lawn care, you know, fertilize like crazy, kill the weeds with whatever it takes to kill them, you know, control the grubs with insecticides, and, you know, get a good lawn no matter what the cost. Towards the end of my career at my company, I began to think really heavily about alternatives to those types of products. You know, and I started to put together some thoughts about how we could potentially create nice turf without the use of all these chemicals, and actually without the overuse of all these chemicals. We lawn care services tend to get carried away with what they use, at least they used to. So I began to seek out ways to put together products, natural products, to create healthy grass. It's really based on organic agriculture. When an organic farm goes into heavy production of produce or anything else, their goal is to create extremely healthy soil, soil that is alive with microorganisms and the soil food web. And that's not something you can do overnight. It's somewhat complicated, but the organic agriculture industry really had it figured out. So I borrowed very heavily from their techniques and a lot of the products that they use, knowing that if they can grow, if you can grow an organic cornfield successfully, there's absolutely no reason why you can't grow, organic grass, relatively easily. So, to make a long story short, we put together a group of products and methods to grow, a nice stand of turf grass without using harsh, chemical fertilizers and, mm-hmm. and dangerous pesticides.
Now, the interesting part is that now that you've been out of the chemical world for so many years, and with all the issues that people are having from all these chemicals, it's just interesting how you can't even find out exactly what the impact has been exactly, because it's really difficult to find out, okay, just how much impact have these chemicals made?
There's so much research being done in really just the last couple of years on a lot of these products. Good research, not things that the chemical companies tell us or not things that EPA tells us, but decent. I know you had Jay Feldman on a few weeks ago, and an organization like his is really pushing that message and getting the word out to the public. Unfortunately, a lot of these issues fall into the category of just misinformation. You're absolutely right. The public just doesn't know. And I can't tell you how many times when I talk to a customer or somebody and I explain, that 2,4-D is really not good for you, and I explain why and how much is being used on their lawns, they're shocked. And, they say, this is unbelievable. In today's day and age, how is it that, if we spray weed control on a kid's playground, you have to post a sign that says stay away for 24 hours. But there's being, an incredible amount of information and research being done on these products. And luckily, due to the work of people like you and Beyond Pesticides, people are beginning to understand that it's not a good thing.
Now, in regards to that very subject, it's interesting because they say 24 to 48 hours, nobody should be on the lawn, but how much truth is there to that? Because the thing is that these chemicals, especially imidacloprid and clothianidin, once they get into the ground, it's not like they just wash away or they dissipate because of oxygen or sunlight.
No, in fact, and this with clothianidin and imidacloprid and a lot of the new insect controls, this is, to be honest with you, and this is a completely different issue than talking about, health as it's associated with people. The issues that a lot of these new age insect controls are creating are really frightening. And the reason, like you said, they don't just go away. They're systemic insect controls. And what that means is that in my industry, in the turf industry, if you're trying to control a grub, which feeds on the root system of a lawn, it used to be that you would put down equally awful products called organophosphates, but the mode of action with those would be that they would just, the grub would ingest poison and it would kill it, or the poison would actually get on the grub and it would kill it. These new generation insect controls are systemic, and what that means is that you put them down on the ground months before the grubs are active, the product becomes part of the tissue of the grass plant. So you're actually setting up a situation where, you're creating a long-term meaning months, situation where when and if there is a grub in the lawn, and it does feed on the root system of that lawn, it will die. It creates a situation where the grub molts quicker and it dies. But you're absolutely right. These products are designed to stay in the environment for long periods of time. That's not good for off-target insects. You mentioned butterflies and bees and a whole lot of other things that we don't want to kill. We really don't want to kill those insects. They're really important, you know?
Oh, of course not. But it's interesting because there are some people that when you ask them about, why aren't there any butterflies coming into my garden, this and that, and, you look at the host plants, they should be attracting butterflies. And then when you take a closer look, and this is something that I was a little mortified to realize, that the plants that you're buying in the nurseries are saturated in this stuff. The bulbs, especially, are saturated in dimetacloprid. And,
yep.
Gardeners or just people who like flowers in their yard, they don't even realize that you're buying these plants that are already saturated with these chemicals, and then you wonder why no butterflies are coming into your home environment. And that's a big problem. I mean, the plants in the nursery, they're not required to say that, they've been treated with this, that, and the other thing. The only time that they are required is when it's an organic plant.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a sad thing. You could be dumping all sorts of stuff into your soil. And for those of you that don't understand the value of topsoil can take a very, very long time to rebuild. It's easy to screw it up, but once you have to rebuild it, it could take over a decade.
Well, again, that goes to philosophies in terms of organic agriculture. You don't need, chemicals to feed your plants. You need the soil to feed your plants. But you're right. Any plant material, or like you said, you go to the nursery and you buy, you think you're just putting some plants in the ground. Those plants were probably grown in a situation where there were thousands of those plants in a very large, high, output environment grown, and the grower needs to do, or the grower intends to do everything possible to prevent damage from those plants. And again, a lot of times a grower doesn't necessarily understand or commit to the principles involved with organic agriculture and kind of takes the easy way out, or what they think is the easy way out, and that's not always the case. But no, these products, June, are everywhere, and they're creating incredible issues with. What worries me is bees and colony collapse disorder. And I know you and I have talked about that on a few occasions. That's not something we want to be messing around with, because we need bees to pollinate flowers to ensure our food supply. When you start talking about messing around with the food chain, I think that, it's beyond me how we can continue to let it happen. These products are just really being very harmful to bees, and that worries me. And I know it worries you too. I know you've been on the bandwagon to get this message out for a long time, and I think it's really important.
Yes, and especially with these pesticides that have been granted full registration without having gone through the proper testing. I mean, we don't know what the impact is going to be. And it's interesting, at this particular point, and you've experienced this throughout your whole career. How many chemicals have you actually had to work with where, as you look back and you've got kids, looking back,
yeah,
thinking to yourself, my goodness, look at what I subjected myself to. I would never want anybody, much less my own kids, to be subjected to these chemicals. And yet people continuously dump these chemicals on their lawn.
Listen, that's a scary point, and for a while we thought we had made a lot of improvements with the chemicals that we were using. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it wasn't that long ago, when I was younger and working for a chemical lawn care service, we were using a group of insecticides called organophosphates, products like diazinon, and Durzban, and we were just using them like crazy, an unbelievable amount of these products. When I was younger, we our employer, again, Barefoot Grass, they don't exist anymore, but we had to take blood tests. The employees who were on the road had to actually take blood tests to monitor our cholinesterase levels. And what that means is, the mode of action of an organophosphate is to affect an insect's central nervous system. And guess what? If you're using a chemical that affects an insect's central nervous system, it may tend to affect your nervous system, central nervous system, too, if you're exposed to it often enough. So we had to get blood tests to determine what our baseline was and then monitor it to make sure we weren't being exposed too much. And when I look back on that, it wasn't even that long ago. I mean, and it just blows my mind that somehow, you know, I thought that was okay. It's mind-boggling. Now, EPA has gotten rid of the majority of the organophosphates, but unfortunately, that's where these new insecticides have come in and taken over. And although they appear to be safer, or exposure to humans evidently is not as bad as, say, the organophosphates were, we're now learning, again, going back to the colony collapse disorder, that you're trading one, one issue for another. That's, again, when you mention your children and exposure to them or indirect exposure from myself to them, you know, that's where it gets crazy for me. And I think about all of, you know, here we are in April. It's the middle of April. This week, across the country, millions and millions of lawn care applications were applied. It's that time of year where lawn care services and homeowners and advertising is just, you know, it's at full tilt. And think of all the parents and the children who aren't aware of these issues and are accidentally exposing their kids to a lot of these products. That's where information is key. And education. And again, like I said earlier, I think we've come a long way, you know, due in part to hard work from a lot of people that this message is getting out there. But when you start talking about kids and exposure to kids and you use the word cancer and central nervous system and things like that, it worries me. So I really think that we need to work hard on alternatives at a grassroots level, no pun intended, but, you know, will allow people like you to continue to get the message out, Jay Feldman to work hard on getting the message out in a much bigger sense to help push that information. But I think my part is to just help people understand what they can do on their front lawn and really make a big impact that way.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And with these chemicals, I just want to point out one thing. The chemicals basically attack the nervous system of the insects. And
yeah,
the thing is that they attack, you know, you just mentioned how these chemicals are affecting the nervous systems of human beings. Well, it's the same chemical, and that's why, you know, we're suffering. It's taking longer because we're physically, you know, our mass is much bigger than an insect, but
yeah,
inevitably, especially the chemicals such as clothianidin, which build up in the body, and there is no way to repair the damage that's been done. And I had Dutch toxicologist Dr. Henk Tennekes, who discussed all of his extensive research about that very fact. And it's just disturbing that, you know, these are in so many different products that people use. And, you know, the average homeowner just does not know. They're bombarded with all sorts of different products, and it doesn't matter which garden center you go to, some of these big chains, you know, the help that's there is only as knowledgeable as, you know, they have exposure to the information. I mean, there are some really lovely people that work at these garden centers and nurseries who are very nice people, but they just don't know because, you know, they only have so much knowledge. And unfortunately, the marketers are going to want to push all sorts of stuff on the consumer because basically their job is to sell it. Doesn't matter what time of the year it is, as far as they're concerned, if they can sell a gallon of a particular chemical, as long as they sell it, that's the main concern. So, you know, that's kind of, It's becoming more and more disturbing as you see so many products that are out there that are just being shoved on the public. Now, we actually have a caller in the queue, so I'd like to take the caller. Caller, area code 972?
Yes, yes.
I think I recognize that voice. Would that be my favorite organic Gaga from Gaga's Garden, Ms.
Yes,
Sue Fox?
Yes, it is. Hi, June.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for calling, Susan. And, Susan, did you have a question for Tom?
Yes, I do. I was listening with a great deal of interest, Tom. And I was wondering, other than the old-fashioned way, because I'm in Zone 8, and there's something that I hadn't had growing up in the Chicago area called dollar weed, and it grows on a runner that it pulls out really nicely because I have pulled out so much of it. And I hope I'm calling it by the right name. Are you familiar with it, Tom, dollar weed?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's kind of fun to pull up because if you get it started, it just comes up by, I've pulled up 3 feet of it and I just keep pulling it up. Is there any way to stop it? I mean, once it gets started, and someone actually told me that some places plant it as a decorative type planting, but it really will choke out other things. Is there some way to arrest it and stop it from just taking over a flower bed?
You bring up an interesting point, especially with the decorative part of things. Up here in the Northeast, there's a similar issue with wild violet. And back in the day, I think people planted wild violet around their foundation, and it had nice purple flowers, and it probably looked pretty good. But it's similar to the weed that you explained in that it spreads rapidly. Like on a vine, and it's very, very difficult to control. You want to avoid using a chemical herbicide. That's the last thing you want to do.
Right.
The best way to control weeds like that initially is through cultural practices, the way you mow your lawn, the way you water your lawn. You want to create the best defense against any weed is to have a thick lawn. So if you work hard on building, thick turf, you may not really get rid of it, but it's probably not going to be as noticeable. Every weed is also really just a sign of an issue with your soil. So whenever you have a weed population that you just can't seem to deal with, I always suggest having a soil test done because you may uncover something in your soil is way out of whack, whether the pH is way up or way down. The calcium and magnesium ratio may be completely off, and you can make small changes or do small applications to your lawn based on what that soil test says. That will help begin to minimize those kind of weed issues. You're not going to get rid of that weed overnight. It's going to be a nuisance, for a while, and it's a difficult weed to control even with a chemical herbicide. So a couple of small changes. Again, just mow high, water deeply, treat the soil with organic products to help increase the soil food web, and then have the soil checked because I'll bet that you'll find that there's something way out of whack.
Well, that's a good thought because I hadn't thought to do that. And it does it's more of a shade loving, so it doesn't occur so much in a sunny area. It's more of a where it's more moist and in shade areas. So, but
yeah.
It's certainly, it's an insidious little thing on its little runner. Boy, once it gets going, if there's even a little scrap, it just really takes off. So, but thank you. That is helpful. I hadn't thought of getting it tested. So,
you're welcome.
Now, can I just ask one question? Now, as a master gardener, we're taught that basically weeds are simply plants at a place. Now, there are when it comes to lawn, and mind you, I am not a lawn expert. In fact, I'm the one that instead of doing all sorts of stuff, like I've seen my neighbors actually get on their hands and knees to pick up or to pull out a dandelion. I just let it go because I look at it this way. I would prefer to see a dandelion than dump chemicals. But what I also learned is that certain weeds, if you will, like plantains, for example, that's actually a host plant for butterflies. So that's another reason why I choose to leave it. But having said that, is it that it's certain types of weeds, if you will, that are that should be a concern, or is it the condition of the grass?
You're right, June. A weed is really just a plant out of place. You're absolutely right. And it's always, or most of the time, as a result of an issue within the soil. It's just an indicator that something may be going on with the soil. For instance, plantain and other similar weeds are going to grow or flourish in a soil with a low pH, meaning that the soil is highly acidic. You know, you could just spray a weed control to get rid of the plantain, or you could take a look at the root cause and make an adjustment or an attempt to make an adjustment to the pH in the soil. You know what the biggest issue is with weeds, and what you say is absolutely sensible, is everybody just needs to relax a little bit about it. A dandelion is not the end of the world. It's okay. If you have a dandelion in your lawn, it's really going to be all right. You know, it'll flower, it'll go away, and maybe come back again. But we've just gotten to the point where we're neurotic. I mean, we're literally neurotic about having perfect lawns. I love lawns as much as anybody, and you know, that's what I've spent my life doing. Perfection is impossible. We see, you know, baseball stadiums and, you know, just to achieve the level of perfection at Fenway Park is impossible unless, you know, you have a full-time groundskeeper and grounds crew hanging out at your house every day. It's just not going to happen. And if we all just, you know, relaxed a little bit about it, I think we'd probably be a little bit better off.
That's an excellent point. But, I mean, how healthy really is the lawn at Fenway, much less at Yankee Stadium? You know, I had to bring up Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, thanks, June. Yeah. That's subjective. There's no doubt about that. The lawn is probably pretty healthy, but the things that they're putting on it to get it to be that healthy, the soil isn't particularly healthy, trust me. I mean, Yankee Stadium, the turf at Yankee Stadium is absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful. But there is somebody on site all the time just pumping things into it constantly to make sure it gets that way. It needs to be perfect. And you're just not going to get that in your front yard.
No, you're not. And I just want to read some of the comments that are in the chat room. Coming from Ms. Peach, she writes, most lawn care companies now say they are organic and are not. They lie, and sadly people trust them and put their children at harm. Always check further and ask them about the products that they use. And Ms. Trent writes, good point. I don't use any, but I boycotted anything by Monsanto a long time ago. And now that actually brings up an excellent point. How does a consumer know what to buy? And, you know, what are the organic standards for lawn care?
You know what, there really aren't any specific standards for lawn care. There are a lot of organizations out there trying to create them, but it's different than organic agriculture in that there are strict standards. To call yourself organic, you have to adhere to a certain set of policies. You have to pass, certain, not exams, but, you know, you get checked up on. In terms of lawn care, there isn't a specific set of standards that you can, you know black or white what organic is. I sometimes don't even like the word organic as it applies to lawn care because it's used out of context a lot. My definition of organic lawn care is the use of non-synthetic chemicals to create organic matter in the soil, meaning don't use synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, but use natural products to build up the organic matter in the soil. Unfortunately, nowadays, I stand up for lawn care services all the time. There are so many progressive, very intelligent, environmentally sensitive lawn care services that are popping up all the time, and they work really hard to do the right thing. But it's very easy for a lawn care service to all of a sudden jump on that bandwagon without making any, you know, specific changes to what they're doing, because there are no set standards. There's no organic lawn care police out there trying to figure out who's doing what and who's doing the right thing. Unfortunately, there are a lot of companies who say, hey, man, we better get with the program and tell our customers and our potential customers that, you know, that we're safe and that we're organic. The only way as a consumer you're going to be able to tell or to find out is to ask. Don't just assume that if an estimate says safe or organic or, any of those catchphrases, that they are. You have to ask. You have to, you know, go as far as request material safety data sheets and labels for the products that they use. A lot of the bigger companies, too, they're just huge, nationwide, giant, you know, lawn care services that employ a lot of temporary help. They have an enormous marketing campaigns. And, again, I'll stand up for a lot of these guys because they work very, very hard. You know, and it was my industry for a long time. But sometimes you just don't get the right information. If you ask a question to a salesperson, a lot of times they're going to be more interested in making the sale as opposed to getting you what you want to hear. You have to be diligent. You really have to get educated on some of the products. And if you don't ask, you're never going to find out. Don't just take somebody's word for it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's interesting that you say this, because when it comes to just trying to find a company, the companies that are really sincere, they really do go out of their way to take the time to explain to the homeowner, this is what we do, this is why we do it, this is what you should have been doing, and this is what your previous landscaper was doing wrong. And
yep.
Especially some of the larger companies, and, you know, you see them all the time, the staff is constantly changing because they're obviously not treating their staff well. And, I mean, you want to go with a company that has an excellent reputation but also has the credentials to back it up. Most of the new landscaping companies that are popping up, they employ master gardeners, some master composters. They have all different sorts of certificates in horticulture, and they really know their stuff. And so, I mean, what I would recommend is that you check with your local cooperative extension and also check with your neighbors. I mean, you can never get enough recommendations. And the thing is that ask for references. And when you ask for references, ask the reference that you're the person that you're asking, you know, how often is your lawn, the soil tested? Because that's something that should be done at least twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. And that's something that they should be doing before the landscaper applies any type of amendment or fertilizes it, for that matter, because you want to make sure that the pH is even before you start adding stuff. And, you know, folks, I cannot stress it enough. Your topsoil, once you screw it up, it's not like you could just get a dump truck and just dump it on top of, you know, the poor soil. It goes all the way down. It affects the root system of anything that you plant on your property. So there is no quick fix. The only thing that does fix it is time. So, you know, when you are employing someone to take care of your lawn or, you know, doing any type of landscaping, think of your lawn and your property as you would a child. You wouldn't just hire anybody to take care of your child. You want references. You want to see, you know, what their background is, so on and so forth. Think of it in the same fashion, because once you screw it up, you know, good luck.
Well, you know what? You're talking my talk a little bit here when you talk about newer, responsible lawn care companies and landscape firms that have master gardeners or master composters. They can find a way to repair that damage. There's a lot of newer products on the market today. Our product line actually contains strains of those beneficial microorganisms that the chemicals sterilize. So when you're using products to rebuild that soil, you know, the effort is to stimulate the indigenous species of microbes that are there, but there's a new generation of products that actually add to them. And that's what's made organic lawn care come so far in just the last few years, because you actually can reverse that damage relatively quickly. You know, the products that actually have that biology within the confines of the product itself stimulate the soil relatively quickly. And you're so right. There are so many new companies, or even older companies, that are getting with the program that are really interested in pushing this type of service and philosophy. And it works. That's the best thing about it, is it really, really works. So as you were saying, you need to find somebody you can trust, and there are so many good services out there now that are doing the right thing, and all you have to do is ask, and they'll tell you, they'll talk about things that you and I are talking about right now, and when you get a good feel for them, hire them, and they'll do a good job for you.
Yeah, it's very, very important to take anything that you do on your land very seriously, and once again, there are some really great people. It's always good to ask people, especially if you do shop in a garden center or a nursery and you're not familiar with it. I mean, you know, who doesn't like a bargain? But the thing is that just because it's on sale doesn't necessarily mean it's something you should buy. But what I always like to do is, if I'm buying something for my lawn or for my garden or something, and it's not something that I'm too familiar with, I'll ask the person that works there, I'll say, have you used this? And if they say no, then I'll say, well, do you know somebody that has? And then I'll ask them, why do you use this? What have you found? What other products have you used that are similar? And it's kind of like, if you go to a restaurant and they push certain specials on you, well, have you eaten it? Have you tried it?
Yeah.
What did you like about it? I mean, the same thing. I guess I am the most difficult customer to have, but, you know, that's why I do what I do. But Tom, just out of curiosity, can you talk about some of the products that you've seen that are being pushed on the consumer that really are completely unnecessary?
Let's go back to the grub control issue for a minute. I drove by a store, one of my local hardware stores, the other day, and I took a picture of the sign that was advertising their grub control product. I think it's a imidacloprid, Merit,
mm-hmm.
And to put that down now, you know, just trying to sell, put down your grub control now. And if you know the life cycle of a grub, which most people don't, who really wants to know the stupid life cycle of a grub? But grubs surface in the springtime after overwintering as far down in the soil as they can, and then they turn into a beetle. They don't feed on the root system at all. They aren't doing any active damage. So putting that type of systemic grub control down now isn't going to kill the existing grubs. It just isn't going to. They're not going to ingest the product. And again, we talked about it being systemic. It's going to take some time to become part of the grass plant. But by the time the grubs turn into beetles, the beetles mate in the summer, and then they lay their eggs at the end of the summer, and then the new grubs hatch in the fall or late summer, the product, the grub control that they were advertising to put down now, is no longer effective. It's gone through, you know, its systemic process, and it's weakened because it's 4 or 5 months later. So I saw that, and I said, you know, I'm all for making a sale, right? I mean, everybody wants to sell their product, but at the risk of using a pesticide that some people deem to be harmful to a lot of things, is just wrong to me. You're advertising the application of a chemical that is literally and legitimately useless right now. It absolutely makes no sense to put that product down. And, you know, I hope that the store, you know, that did it, I don't understand, you know, maybe they just don't know and they're going off of the recommendation of the product company, the chemical company. Or it could just be ignorance. They just may not know. But to me, that's just, you know, that's pushing things too far. I'm not a big fan of using the product to begin with. Never mind using it when it's not going to do anything. That's just senseless to me. So yeah, you bring up a really good point. In the interest of pushing the heck out of these chemicals, we're now pushing them when they're not going to do anything.
Now, I just want to mention something that's being discussed in the chat room right now. Miss Trent made a very good point. She said, grubs bear food. Now, this is something that most people don't think about. All they think about is, oh, you know, there's grubs in the lawn. This is unsightly. You know, I don't want to look at this. And the thing is that what exactly are these grubs doing? And who benefits from the grubs? The birds do. I know so many people that they spend so much money on these bird feeders, bird seed, all sorts of stuff. And the thing is that, you know, birds don't want to eat your moldy Wonder Bread or, you know, some random cheap bird seed that you buy. Birds want to eat what they are instinctively inclined to eat, and that is bugs, point blank.
I've been on the opposite side of that argument one too many times when I'm standing in the middle of somebody's lawn, somebody's pride and joy that's being torn to shreds by crows trying to get grubs, and they seem to take a different opinion to that. That's funny.
Well, I see the circle of life every time that it rains, or like especially this morning, I saw a whole bunch of crows that were on my back lawn, and of course, my beloved little feline was enjoying every moment of it because to her,
yeah,
it's hunting time. But not that I'm an advocate of that, which I'm not. I love all animals. But the point is that by removing the grubs, and, you know, it's like the same people that they see an earthworm and they're like, oh, it's a worm. And, yeah, it's an earthworm. It's a sign that your soil is healthy. Leave it alone. I mean,
yeah, right.
People are so willing to annihilate anything that they deem to be an aberration of some sort, and they don't realize that what may be unsightly to them is something that's really beneficial. And we are just so quick to kill off anything that we don't have a need for or don't really understand. And the thing is that, you know, so what if you have grubs? Who cares? I mean, they're not going to be there forever. You know, the birds are most likely going to pick them off, and
yeah. So
be it. And the best thing about the birds is that they provide fertilizer.
There you go, right.
So it's kind of, well, it's like with anything else. You look at how each organism has its place. You have the grubs that are there. The birds eat the grubs. The birds are basically you know, fertilizing the lawn, if you will, and, you know, it helps to just keep things growing healthy. Now, what are some of the other things that you've noticed, especially in your neck of the woods, that you see being pushed in the public that just really have no business being even for sale?
Man, I could tell you a few. The other big one that I'm not a huge fan of is weed and feed products, granular fertilizers that are actually combination products with weed control. So, say you've got half a dozen dandelions in your lawn, and you've got a small patch of clover in your backyard. You may even have a couple of plantain plants over, you know, next to the fence. You know, and that would be considered a fair amount of weeds. These products, combination fertilizer weed control products, have you applying that weed control to your entire lawn. And that, you know, does that seem to make a lot of sense? Especially if it's a product that, you know, again, some people may deem to be harmful to the environment or to your health. I don't understand why we want to push the fact that we need to apply that to the entire property when we've got a half a dozen weeds on the lawn. You know, if you're going to choose to use a chemical herbicide, you can probably find a way to just treat those weeds. And again, I don't even suggest doing that. There's other ways to deal with it, but it's just wasteful. There's an incredible amount of over-application of these products. And perhaps if we could reduce that to, you know, a sensible amount, we'd be in much better shape. Maybe we wouldn't be having this argument as much as we are. Again, I find that there's better, more effective ways to deal with these problems and pests. There's more natural methods. And as you said, we said before, it's a signifier that there could be something with the soil. There's even a whole new generation of herbicides and insecticides that are EPA exempt and you can use that you know, aren't going to create an issue. But when the chemical companies are pushing the overuse, the consistent overuse of these products all the time, we've got a serious problem, and weed control is one of them. There's just no reason to apply a weed and feed product to, you know, 12,000 square feet when your weeds make up 100 square feet. You know, that's just senseless to me. You know, I could go on and on too. We push, you know, you've got to fertilize your lawn, you know, 6 times a year, all the time. You know, push green growth all, you know, constantly. And that's a whole nother set of issues is you know, chemical synthetic fertilizers that contain water-soluble nitrogen and phosphorus and the issues that they create within the environment and water. When there are just sensible alternatives to these things that many people have deemed to be harmful, I don't understand why we don't use them more often. And well, again, that goes back to the issue of education and communication. And when the chemical companies are playing nonstop, you know, funny television commercials about how if you have a dandelion in your lawn, you're going to be a loser, you know, there's a lot of work to do to reverse that, you know, that thinking.
Yes, and that is, it's a long road ahead, but a lot of people are starting to see all of the consequences from using all the different chemicals. Now, we actually have another question from the audience. This is coming from Miss Peach. She'd like to know, when is the best time to plant new grass seed, and should you overseed every year?
You know, it's funny, the best time to plant grass is at the end of the season, in the late summer or early fall. You would think that not the case based on the amount of seed commercials that are on television and the radio right now. You know, you can plant grass seed this time of year in the springtime, but typically what happens, you know, for instance, last summer in most parts of the country, it was just terribly hot and dry. So when you try to establish new seed in April or May, you can usually get it to come up and fill in, but when June, July, and August get here and it's 100 degrees and it hasn't rained in 6 weeks, that area is typically going to fill in, you know, with weeds and crabgrass, and you're just going to have to do it again in the fall. We always recommend overseeding at the end of the year as opposed to the beginning of the year. If you're going to do it in the beginning of the year, don't spend a ton of money, don't spend a ton of time doing it, but there are obviously certain situations where you want to give it a shot. You know, if you've got a bare spot and it's going to be muddy and it's going to turn to dust, you know, go for it. Just don't go crazy with it. Overseeding your lawn in general is the best defense against any weeds. The thicker the grass is, the taller the grass is, the more difficult it is for weeds to not only germinate, but to flourish. And when you're shading the soil, keeping soil temperatures down, you're gonna keep weeds out. So seeding is good. Seeding is a good thing. We want thick grass to keep weeds out. Just don't spend $2,000 on a seeding project in May when it's going to be 95 degrees 6 weeks down the road.
Now, what about cutting the grass if keeping it thick? That's a good excuse for me when I don't feel like mowing the lawn, but I won't do that.
Well, if everybody would just relax with the way they mow their lawns. We mow our lawns like crazy. In the summertime, I see people out there on a really hot day mowing their lawns down to, you know, an inch, and then I can predict when the crabgrass and the weeds are going to infiltrate. Sometimes it's just better to leave things alone. You know, just relax about it. Let it grow. When it cools off, you know, mow it, but don't scalp it down to an inch and a half. You know, just like you said, relax and find an excuse not to do it as opposed to an excuse why you have to do it.
Yeah, and especially in the month of August here in New York, everybody's lawn kind of dies and people go nuts. And the thing is that the lawn is simply going dormant. It's okay. Just let it go. It'll come back. It's not going to be destroyed. It's like as other plants, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. The lawn will spring back up. That's the beauty of lawn. But some people, they just go crazy because they don't have this thick, plush lawn in the middle of August where the temperatures are, you know, in the upper 90s, hundreds, and they just go bananas. What would you recommend to people that are just fanatical about their lawn care at that time of the year?
Oh, I love people who are fanatics about their lawn. I do. It's you know, again, it's what I've done my whole life. So when people are crazy about their grass, it's a good thing. I think it's okay. And as long as we're continuing to educate them on how, you know, they can keep it looking nice, you know, the better off they are in their own heads, I guess. But believe it or not, when you use organic products on your lawn, you use far less water. A soil that's very healthy in terms of organic matter, you know, again, I keep going back to the soil food web, an ecosystem in the soil that's very healthy. It just doesn't dry out as much. The root systems of the turf get so much deeper into the soil that they're able to conserve water better. The root systems aren't trying to surface to get every last drop. So organic lawns are much, I mean, literally much more resistant to heat and drought. And for the fanatics out there who lose their marbles every time their lawn turns brown, I suggest that they start using more organic products because they're going to be feeling a little bit better over the summertime about how their grass looks.
Now, we have another question from the audience, and we are getting close to the end of the show. So we're going to have you come back, Tom, because let me tell you, the audience absolutely loves you, and there are just so many questions. We haven't even gotten to the whole battery of questions on Twitter. But
right.
one popular guy, gotta love it. This question, again, this is from Miss Peach. She wrote corn gluten. She was just checking out your line of products, which, by the way, look awesome. And she wrote, how does this work with weeds?
Yeah, corn gluten came out with incredible fanfare years ago in terms of that it was a natural way to prevent crabgrass. Crabgrass drives us all crazy. And people at the University of Iowa found that the corn gluten, which is a byproduct of processing corn, somehow, some way inhibits crabgrass seeds from germinating. The drawback has always been that it's also a very good fertilizer. It's very high in nitrogen. So when you're applying corn gluten at an appropriate rate to try to prevent weeds from germinating, you're also applying an incredible amount of fertilizer, which is creating growth. You know, the grass is growing like crazy. Any weeds that have germinated are also going to grow like crazy. Corn gluten is a really good fertilizer. It's a slow-release source of nitrogen. Corn gluten is a very good organic fertilizer. You know, if you're going to fertilize your lawn, corn gluten is a great way to go about it. The issue is that you have to put down so much of it. It can get expensive. It gets difficult to apply. But it works great. It's a great way to feed your lawn. And it does have some properties going to prevent crabgrass. There's a new generation of products, corn gluten products that are liquid. And what they've been able to do is take the nitrogen out of the product and concentrate, the properties that are preventing weeds from germinating. So the contradiction that was once a part of corn gluten is now kind of erased. And we're getting much better results with that liquid corn gluten than we were with the granular.
Now, a quick question from Mitch on Twitter. He wants to know, how do you know if the corn gluten is from genetically modified corn?
Man, I don't know. I knew we were going to end up going down the genetically modified road with you, June. I know you're very into this right now. I don't know that there is a way. I think at this point we think just about every corn plant on the planet is GMO, that's a really good question. I don't even know if there'd be a way for you to find that out.
Well, you would think that they would label the product. Well, if it's it's got to go through the, I don't know if the non-GMO program even has it, and even that, it's not necessarily 100%.
There's
still a very, very small, minute percentage that's still allowed. But you know, the bottom line is that when it comes to the GMOs, it affects the bees, it affects all the pollinators, and it's not something that's desirable, especially if you want to maintain everything organically. Another quick, wow, we only have 5 minutes left. Another quick comment. This is from Lindsay. Tom, I'm enjoying your interview very much. Any suggestions for lawns that don't get a lot of sun?
Yeah, you really need to start with choosing a proper grass type. There are many, many, many different types of grass nowadays that you can really customize the type of lawn that you want to grow. For instance, if you're going to plant bluegrass in the shade, you're out of luck because bluegrass isn't going to do well in the shade at all. You should definitely go to the store and purchase a shade seed blend, which is going to be made up mostly of fine fescues, which will do very well in the shade. They'll thrive. They require very little maintenance. You don't need to fertilize them. As long as your soil is healthy and it's, you know, you're going to get some sunlight in there, a fine fescue stand of turf in the shade will do very well.
Thank you. Another comment from our audience, Ms. Peach wrote in, tell him he needs to write a book to help educate the public. My neighbors just don't get it. So I just wanted to share that with you.
I'm working on it.
We are actually almost out of time, but I want to say thank you so much for coming back on the show. And as I said, we will have to have you come back on because there's just so many questions, and our audience just absolutely adores you, Tom. So if you could just take a moment to talk about Firebelly and how people can connect with you on Twitter and also your company's website.
Yeah, we sell a line of products at firebellylawncare.com, and on Twitter it's Firebelly Lawn Care, that are really replacements. What we've tried to do is simplify the process for people who don't want to use chemicals on their lawn anymore. It gets very confusing. There's so many products out there, you know, that it's daunting when you walk into a garden store and say, you know, I want to treat my lawn without using chemical fertilizers. There's so much out there right now. We've tried to simplify the process. So we sell products that make it easy for you to convert to a chemical-free method of treating your lawn. We've got a step program that tells you exactly what to do and when to do it. We've got a product called Organic Lawn in a Box. It can't get any more simple than that, right? It's a four-step or a six-step program that makes it really easy for you to treat your lawn organically.
Thank you. And just a couple more questions if we can possibly squeeze these in. Really quickly, this next question is coming from Jay, and if you could just quickly say, do you have any suggestions for a new homeowner as far as lawn maintenance?
Just start working on the soil. Help that soil become rich in organic matter. Seed appropriately. Cultural practices are so important. Water deeply, mow high, and be patient. That's the main thing. Be patient. Don't expect a golf course right away. Just try to do the right thing and educate yourself on how to do it.
Thank you. And, you know, folks, when it comes to lawn care, I mean, there are so many wonderful resources. Your local cooperative extension is also one of them. Tom, do you have any references that you might want to suggest to our listeners out there that are either looking to solve different issues or get started?
Oh, well, yeah, first of all, I mean, I'm very happy to help people out with questions, whether it's on a show like yours or they can call anytime and talk to us. But Cooperative Extension is a great resource too.
Thank you. And Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure as always. And thank you everybody for tuning in, for all the questions. And you know, I'm sorry we didn't get to all the questions, but we will have Tom Kelly back very soon. And we're actually going to have him on to talk about his garden line. So stay tuned for that. And folks, this has been June Stoyer with your Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon.